The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rant, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rant, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
Your ID is about to get much more expensive. We'll tell you who's to blame and how it's a huge bit of hypocrisy. We'll talk with a business owner by the name of Philip Sidore, who yet again suffered a break-in in Seattle. Plus, speaking of Seattle, why is it that we can't figure out the homelessness crisis at all? We've got someone who has just lost his patience, and he wants something to get done. We're going to talk with that man and so much more this hour of the Jason Rant Show, brought to you by StreetTalkFinancial.com. So, let's get into it.
The monologue.
I have to call out just the insanity of the left as it relates to IDs. We were told for the longest time by folks on the left, and this was coming exclusively from activists on the left and politicians on the left, that it is unfair to force people to have an ID, show an ID when they vote, because not everyone can afford an ID. We were told that over and over and over again. In particular, they were talking about black people. That it's not fair to black people because they cannot afford to get an ID for a variety of reasons. And they would throw out a whole bunch of reasons that never really made sense. And what was pretty clear from anyone who was paying attention to this just silly talking point was that it wasn't actual black people who were making that claim. Black people were not making that claim. This was something that was exclusively coming from folks on the left because they wanted to get in the way of voter ID laws. So I see a story today that Washington State is about to increase the cost for licenses, for IDs. And it's going to start on October 1st. So coming up, just a couple days, a few days. Now, it's not a huge increase. It's not a huge increase, but we've been having a lot of these conversations about the need to get your enhanced license so that you can fly. And they've been putting this on hold for the longest time. But now they're increasing it by $3 per year. And that means a six-year license or an ID will cost $18. An eight-year version will cost $24 more. Because remember, you're buying this by the year. So you're going to get hit with either $18 or $25, $24 more than you normally would. Now, for the average person, that's not a whole lot of money. The average person. Everyone who's listening to me right now can probably very easily afford $18 for a six-year license. That's not what this is about. What this is about was the lie that we were being told over and over and over again that merely having a license is too much burden for the African-American community. And yet they roll this through and no one's making a big deal about it. Where are all the Democrats telling me about how unfair it is to raise the cost of an ID? Where are all those Democrats calling out this is a symptom of white supremacy culture? Where's anyone on the Democratic side right now in the state legislature? Where's Marco Elias? Where's Joe Wynn? Where's Jesse Johnson? Where are all these representatives who love to lecture us about how policies that they just don't like are racist? Policies that they don't like have a disproportionate impact on the black community? Where are you? Why is it that you're suddenly silent on this? I'd love to know. Or maybe could you at least step up and say, yeah, you know what? I'll be honest. We were lying the whole time. We just don't like voter ID laws because at some point we do hope that people can vote without an ID and we're not really all that concerned about voter fraud because we think it's going to benefit us. Just come out and say that. But you cannot hold both of those positions, that voter ID laws and anything really revolving around the need for an ID is disproportionately impacting black people, while also sitting back and saying, oh yeah, we're going to raise the fees for a license. Where's your concern? Where's your concern? Remember, license plates already went up. That went up in July as part of this new law that Democrats passed. This wasn't Republicans pushing this. This was Democrats. So please remember this story the next time you're told that just horrible talking point about how, oh, any license fee, any voter ID, it just disproportionately impacts people of color because they can't afford it. It is so condescending, and it's basically, at the end of the day, a bold-faced lie, and they know it.
The interview.
Unfortunately, every single day we can talk to a new business owner who's telling us about the crime crisis in Seattle. It doesn't seem to be going away. And unfortunately, we can probably talk to a lot of business owners who have been hit not once, but twice, maybe even more. In fact, that's the case with Philip Sidore. He is the owner of the Spot restaurant in West Seattle, and he joins me now. Philip, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you so much.
So unfortunately, you just had a break-in. Take us through what happened.
I did. I wish this interview was about my amazing food and waffles, and but unfortunately and sadly, it's about a break-in. So on the morning, Sunday morning, this last Sunday morning, at 5:30, roughly a.m., someone smashed out our front window and crawled through and then stole our register and a bunch of other items and left.
They just, how long was the guy in the store for?
So, you know, it was pretty crazy. He was outside trying to get in for about 10 minutes and then calmly walked around the inside of my restaurant for about another 5 while he did his business and then left.
Wow. So total about 15 minutes or so he was there. At what point did you learn that this happened? There was no alarm that was triggered?
Well, my daughter and I showed up at 6:45 to get prep going for a busy Sunday, and the back door looked like it had been kicked open. And then just on further inspection, I saw the front window was smashed, so we called the police.
Okay. How long did it take for them to arrive?
They were actually on it. I will say that. The West Seattle police were came very quickly. They were very thorough. They did an amazing job.
All in, how much damage was done? How much is this going to cost you to repair?
It's really hard to tell. I'm still kind of going through it. You know, it's in the thousands. And for a small kind of mom-and-pop operation, mm-hmm. which we are, that's a big hit.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, every once in a while when covering stories like this, I get the people who try to make excuses for the people who do the burglary that, oh, no, they're just trying to survive and it's just property. It's not quite like that. I mean, this whole idea that you've just got insurance that you can lean on and that's that, and it's not really going to cost you any significant dollars or heartache is just absurd, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I don't think that's a valid argument. I'll just speak from my perspective as the business owner. We were closed for most of Sunday, which is one of my busiest days. Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect of it. We had to close again Monday and Tuesday. So that, you know, that is additional money outside of having to replace the window, the money that was taken, the damage that was done inside, and then just the mental toll that it takes. You know, I'm up now at various times throughout the night. I can't sleep checking my cameras because I don't want somebody else to break in and steal from us. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And you know, again, going back to the insurance piece, like it isn't just that easy. It's a whole process, and then mm-hmm. the premiums go up, or they might drop you, or you know, there's a number of other things that can be baked into all of this, right? And it's time away from what I need to be doing, which is focusing on my business to try to get this turned around.
Well, and on top of that, this isn't the first time you've had a break-in, right?
It isn't. It's the second time. So, yeah, the first time was around April. And it was most of that was product mm-hmm. That was taken. And it was there was no, I guess, physical damage to the outside of the building. We have a storage unit, and they broke into the storage unit and wiped us out.
And did you, just looking at the surveillance, and by the way, we posted the surveillance online at twitter.com/JasonRantz. Did it look like someone you recognize from hanging out in the area?
I couldn't tell. I don't think it was. I didn't recognize it. We got a pretty good close-up of the individual. I didn't recognize them, and I don't believe it was somebody that was homeless.
You don't. So this was more of like a targeted type of hit.
Seemed more targeted. Yeah.
So when you experience this, not once, but twice in a city that, I mean, you're obviously paying attention to the news. You see that crime is going up, not just violent crime, but crime like this. What goes through your head just as a business owner?
You know, I think business owners in general are optimistic and try to stay positive in the face of adversity, but it is a little deflating. It's sad. You know, it makes me really sad. It's our neighborhood, and to see that there's an influx in crime and damage, really, it makes me pretty sad. And I know firsthand how it affects small businesses, and I can empathize with everybody else that it's happened to. It's really it can be disheartening.
Have you taken any steps to connect with city leaders or, you know, folks in your community to find some kind of solution?
I have not.
Why not? And the reason why I asked that is just because, you know, we hear from a lot of folks who say, you know, we've reached out to the city. They're not really paying attention. The cops have been doing a really good job, but there's only so much that they can do. Just from your perspective, you know, do you sit back hoping that stories that get publicized like this will move people? Why wouldn't you try to engage with, you know, you've got a Seattle city council member in West Seattle. What's stopping you?
You know, I think it's just the time is a big situation.
Yeah.
But then also, like, you know, I think not really knowing who my I don't know who's in West Seattle. And
Lisa Herbold.
I guess Lisa Herbold?
Yeah.
Okay. Reaching out, I mean, would be the next step. I mean, this is the second time. The first time it was kind of like, well, nothing can be done. Mm-hmm. You know, you're kind of on your own. So I kind of just accepted it and tried to move forward the best I could. But now that this is the second time, you know, I think I will look to be more proactive and kind of raise up the flagpole a little higher so that not just for me, but for my, you know, my community and the other mm-hmm. small businesses in that community, hopefully there can be other things that can be put in place to protect us.
Yeah, this kind of stuff hurts. It hurts on the small scale. It hurts with big businesses as well. Check out The Spot in West Seattle, thespotwestseattle.com. If you want to get a little bit more information, they make the best waffles in all of Seattle. So check out The Spot in West Seattle. You're on Avalon Way, right? Southwest Avalon Way?
Yep.
There you go. Yeah. Make sure you guys check it out. Support this business. They need a little bit of extra support now that they've had to close their doors for a few days because of the crime crisis here. We've been talking with the owner of the Spot, Philip Sidori. Thank you so much, Philip, for coming on. I really do appreciate it. And sorry you guys are going through this.
I appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time to highlight what's happening in Seattle here.
Absolutely. It is important. Again, thespotwestseattle.com. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Monologue.
This should come as no shock to you that there was a fire this morning, yet again, at an encampment. This one, yet again, by a freeway. In this case, it was under the Ship Canal Bridge. It started earlier this morning, about 7:30 a.m., and it ended up causing, as you might imagine, a whole bunch of traffic confusion. Because as people were driving on over the Ship Canal Bridge, what they ended up seeing was a whole bunch of smoke. And at some point, because I've seen some video that was posted or photos that were posted in social media, it was very difficult to see through. So you are slowing down. You are wondering what in the God's name is going on. And it causes those kind of problems on top of the fact that now it has to be inspected for damage, the bridge itself. And WashDOT is going ahead and doing that. But this is yet another time, yet again, where the homelessness crisis is showing you how out of control it truly is, and how there really isn't anything being done, either on a city level, a county level, or a state level. This is WashDOT property. This is WashDOT property. And they have allowed people to live wherever it is they want to live on their property because they don't believe in sweeps. Even when there is plenty of space available for them in a shelter, they still choose to do nothing. They sit back and they do nothing. And in this case, by the way, you had propane tanks at this encampment, which really, really concerned the firefighters there because they were hearing some popping noises as they were going in there to try to put out the fire. Now, the good news is the fire was put out. No one was hurt. But the homeless guy who lived there obviously was caught by surprise and knows that this could have gone way worse because he wasn't alone.
He just saw the flames and all of a sudden there was all these people running out.
So the flames grow and grow and grow. And it ends up, of course, taking out a lot of the stuff that this guy and others own.
Now, for me, I've got to figure out, there's dinner tonight, so how is that going to happen, you know, and all of my food just burnt up.
Yeah. So for you, you can go into a shelter. You got to choose to go. And if you're not going to choose to go, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to have any more sympathy. I can't. I just can't do it anymore. At some point, I think it's fair to say you are choosing to do this to yourself. I don't think that everyone chooses to be homeless, but at some point they're making that choice. They're putting people's lives in danger. They are putting people's lives in danger. And the truth of the matter is, every single time we get a story like this, we have to remind people what's on the line. It's not just the lives of the homeless people. It's the lives of the firefighters who have to go in there and take care of the fire. It's about the lives of the drivers nearby who are getting distracted by the smoke It is about the infrastructure that ends up getting potentially damaged because of these fires. Fires that were put up because they just wanted to either cook or they wanted to stay warm. I understand why they are starting fires. I get it. It's starting to get very cold outside. Today was the first time we saw rain in a long time. It was chilly this morning, and it's only going to get chillier as the weeks and months go on. And before you know it, we're going to be in winter, and they're going to be having a lot of other fires or plugging in heaters that are half broken that end up causing bigger fires that spread that do considerable damage. And we're not supposed to say anything. We're not supposed to look at this story without with any sort of critical lens. We're just supposed to feel bad for the people, and I certainly feel bad for the situation that they're in. But we're only supposed to feel bad and then move on. We do that all the time on these kinds of stories. And then before you know it, you've got a similar story in which someone dies. A homeless man is burned to death. Or a couple burned to death. Are we not supposed to call this out and say that we have to do something? No, apparently not. Because God forbid we actually demand that the city, county, or state do something about homelessness.
The interview.
You know, when you live in a Seattle neighborhood, or really any neighborhood, and the homeless have taken over a part of it, you feel unsafe. You don't feel like the city cares about you. When you reach out to the city multiple times asking for some help, and they're unwilling to provide it, well, they pretty much confirm they don't really care about you. Victor is a concerned resident in Ballard, and he joins me now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You've been having some sort of drama, I guess, trying to clear up a portion of basically two sidewalks under a bridge that's used by folks who live in the area. Take us through what's been going on.
Yeah, Jason, so thank you for having me. I'm a longtime fan. So what's going on is underneath the Holman Bridge out in the Crown Hill neighborhood of Ballard, there is a series of RVs. You know, it started with one. I put in an original request and find it, fix it. And then it's just kind of cascaded into now five or six, depending on just the cycle that they've been staying there. A lot of trash, a lot of, you know, concerning items and, you know, waste material that's been left over. And it's just, it's become a bit of a hazard, and I'm a little concerned about it. I keep on putting in Find It Fix It tickets, and nothing's happening.
Now, Find It Fix It is an app that's provided by the city, and usually, outside of homelessness issues, when you file some sort of complaint, you say there's, you know, a couch that's been left on the side of the road. They're pretty good about picking it up reasonably quickly. You're putting in all of these tickets, and you're just not getting any response.
Correct. Yeah, I've had a series of tickets. I think right now I'm at 11 tickets underneath for this particular instance. I use it for other things. I have reported a couch underneath that same bridge. Originally, it was like a legal dumping underneath that bridge, you know, or an RV was there for, you know, 2 or 3 days and would leave and just leave a ton of trash. So I took a picture of it and sent it out. Yeah, but I've done, I think, 11 or 12 tickets in totality just for the RVs.
How is this impacting, how's it impacting the community?
You know, it's a bit of an issue. I talked to my neighbors, and I have some feedback from the neighbors. Some of the neighbors don't feel safe walking to the QFC anymore, especially through that area. Both of the sidewalks are taken up, and the RVs themselves are parked over the line. So it's causing a bit of a traffic issue, let alone you can't, when you drive out because of the parking garage, you can't see. So it's a blind turn. There's already been a couple of car wrecks.
Of course.
And then at the same time, there's a senior center right next to it, and they have mobile scooters. And the mobile scooters actually go into the road to go around the RVs to make it to the QFC. So that's kind of the thing that we're dealing with over here.
So it's unsafe. It's unsanitary. The list goes on and on. Have you reached out to the council member who represents you? His name is Dan Strauss.
Yeah, Dan Strauss. I sent him an email. I have reached out to the mayor several times, actually just calling over and leaving a voicemail. I started doing emails after a while. And, you know, that's how you guys got involved. And I also sent this over to We Heart Seattle to see if they had any solutions to this. But, yeah, as a concerned resident, you know, this has just been an issue for me.
Well, has the city gotten back to you at all, whether it's the mayor's office or the council member's office?
So one time I did get a phone call from the mayor's office stating from one of the assistants that there was nothing they could do about it. And then I gave some pushback at that point in time. And
good.
Eventually,
what does that even mean? We can't do anything. It's against the law.
Yeah, that's what I asked. I was like, hey, if my car was parked under there, I'd be towed in an hour. So what's going on? They've been here for over 8 months. And then also just 2 days ago, I was at the stoplight at the other end of the road, and there was a parking enforcement officer there. And I was like, hey, what are you going to do about this down there? And they just asked me how I vote because city council had nothing, wasn't allowing them to do anything. So I think when, you know, the officers are out there, they're trying to do their things.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to do their job. And then they ask you how you vote. You know, obviously, I think I'm voting differently.
Yeah, well, so. I certainly hope so. Did you vote for Dan Strauss in the past?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so then you're going to be a consistent vote against him. What do you think the message is to you and just the city in general when you get that kind of response? What are they saying?
You know, they just closed the ticket and they say it's resolved.
No, but I mean to you, I mean, how do you take it? I mean, how do you take it? I mean, are you basically of the position now that the city just doesn't care, or do you think that there is just too much politicking involved? Like, how do you go from that position?
It kind of hits me that the city's on a decline and they don't care for me at all or my neighbors. Let alone the neighbors that have disabilities. I keep on putting this down as an ADA issue, especially because of the power carts. And it's like, at least keep the sidewalk open. But
yeah,
then
no
at
kidding.
The same time, if the sidewalk's even somewhat open, you know, I walk down there all the time, and I don't even want to walk down there. And I've had a couple of the residents in the apartment building even tell me that they are purposely not even walking that direction, or they're taking their vehicle because they feel unsafe around there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm at the point where it's, you know, been 8 to 10 months that I've been doing these reports consistently. And the only thing that happens is they close the ticket. They say it's resolved, or I get an auto email from the mayor saying, hey, this is an issue because of homelessness. Or even Dan Strauss said, you know, if I got an auto email from Dan Strauss saying, you know, thank you for emailing me. Unfortunately, you got to email it to someone else. So I send it over to them and there's no response. There's nothing that really gets, there's no opportunity to grow in this at all. And, you know, my heart goes out. I work in the community and I'm involved in the community. You know, I've done tons of volunteer work and I come from that kind of background, and I'm just look at this and it's just not beneficial, for any party involved.
It's absurd what's going on. I can't say I'm shocked at it. Hopefully this brings a little bit more attention to the issue. We posted some of the photos online on our Twitter feed. For those of you who want to check it out, twitter.com/JasonRants. But at the end of the day, the question of how you vote actually is all that matters at this point, because I think that's the only way that things are going to change. It's politically. So, Victor, sorry you're going through this, but I do appreciate you sharing your perspective, and hopefully we can move the needle a little bit at this particular location.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I'll keep you guys updated on any kind of, you know, reach out if we get any, and I'll just continue to make this my hobby.
So. There you go. At least you have some time to make it a hobby. Lots of people don't. Thank you so much, Victor. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Now this. There you go. 3, 2, 1.
The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke the story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Kareem Patton was recently terminated from Do Good Multnomah. That according to Kareem, who says he got into some hot water because on social media, he apparently spread a message that some folks didn't like. To help figure out exactly what happened is Kareem Patton. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
So you are a veteran. You are a person who wanted to give back to the community. Take us through exactly what went on from your perspective.
All right. Well, I'm a combat veteran. I've served in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Korea. And I know what it's like to come back and, you know, don't feel at home. You kind of have trouble kind of integrating back into society. And also, obviously, we have a high number of our homeless people, veterans. So I decided that, you know, if I'm able-bodied and I can do something, I care about my fellow veterans. So I decided to give back. And unfortunately, you have to be certain political leaning to do that in the community in Portland.
So how so? What's your political leanings and what got you into trouble?
Well, I've been conservative for years. I make no bones about that. Obviously, I don't bring my personal life to work, but I've been a supporter of President Trump and various other conservative candidates in Oregon. And the particular post that got me in trouble was somebody had a sign that said it's okay to be white. And me being a conservative, it's okay to be anybody. We're all Americans, you know? And so I decided to hold the sign to say, hey, these words don't hurt me as a Black American man. And that and also other posts from Rose City Antifa and other Antifa groups in Portland just started making posts. You know how they dox people and they put down whatever garbage they put down. They gave that to my employer, and they are, it's a very woke company, and very, very much so believe in all the, you know, oppression Olympics and victimization of everybody. So
how did they even find out who you were and what you posted?
Well, what was told to me, which I don't particularly believe, but they said that the participants or the people or the veterans that we are taking care of and trying to help them get housing, they said it was brought to their attention first from them. And then the staff, the very left-leaning staff started, I guess, searching for any dirt they could find on me. And they just saw that I was at a few rallies and things of that nature. And I have hats on the internet, or I have pictures on the internet with me having Trump hats on. And that's all it took.
Well, they also accuse you of being a member of Patriot Prayer.
Well, I'm not a member of Patriot Prayer. I know who Joey Gibson is. I think he's a great American. I think he is, you know, just using the his First Amendment right. And a lot of people in Oregon really despise that. So you don't have to actually be a part of any patriot group, just be either a patriot or just a concerned citizen that's not a leftist. You're asking for trouble.
Yeah, because I'm just going over some of the tweets that they name you specifically from Rose City Antifa. This, again, is on Twitter. You know, they also claim that you hang out with white nationalists. And I have to imagine, as a Black man, that might be a little uncomfortable if true.
Yeah, considering that white nationalists really particularly don't like Black people, I usually don't try to make friends with people who don't want to have anything to do with me. And the thing about it, it's all slander. We have to remember, and I think you know just as well as anybody, the bar for what a racist or a white nationalist is or whatever is very low these days. You know, I've been called a white nationalist just purely saying people in America, we need to identify as Americans first instead of race. That's how America became a great nation. And, you know, you kind of get shouted down for that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've certainly seen the way that folks over in Portland and the Antifa camp go after folks on the right. Sometimes there's some valid criticism across the board. They call you a violent bigot. So I guess I'll give you the opportunity to react to that.
Well, unfortunately, my track record and my actions are the opposite of that. I've served with people that are LGBTQ. I've served with all races of people. I've been around the world, literally, and interacted with so many different religions. And I've found so many great people, just great humans, great people. And, you know, I just can't imagine me just saying one group of people are a problem or anything like that. So it's if and I also, when I got fired, I said, hey, do you have any evidence of me assaulting anybody or saying anything disparaging, or do you have any of that information? Or they didn't answer. They just said, oh, well, you were with them, i.e. conservatives, and you participated. So
yeah,
that's all they needed.
We're talking with Kareem Patton. He says he was fired from his volunteer position with Do Good Multnomah, who we are reaching out to just to get their perspective on this. But it all happened after, you say, there was basically a Twitter campaign or social media campaign to highlight the fact that you're a conservative and that it can't be easy living in Portland as a conservative, especially, I imagine, as a black conservative, because I'm pretty sure they consider you to be a sellout.
Yeah, and the thing, I've been in activism in Oregon since I moved over there, mostly with veterans issues, but obviously with conservative issues like the Second Amendment and veteran services. And once President Trump came on the scene, because I live downtown Portland in Chinatown, so that's in the middle of pretty much everything that's mm-hmm. been going on the last few years, and, you know, the descent into madness, I kind of realized that if I stay quiet because of the mob, it's only going to get worse. But if I use my rights endowed to me by my creator and the Constitution, I just was compelled, especially being a veteran and seeing other places where we don't have, or it's not we, but other people around the world don't have anywhere close to the freedoms we get to enjoy and take advantage of. And so I just had to speak out.
Do you get the sense that Portland is ever going to change?
I think it will change eventually, but it's unfortunately going to get worse. The voters just believe that, well, the main thing is there's a small minority of leftists or far left that kind of hijack all conversations about the social goings on in Portland. And unfortunately, the voters or moderate voters keep voting for these very politicians that kowtow to them. Mm-hmm. So I believe it'll get a lot worse, and a lot more people will lose their lives. But I think maybe in a few years, people will start realizing that they need to vote differently.
Well, and it's, you know, if you look at Oregon as a whole, not just Portland, it looks like you actually have, for the first time since I believe President Reagan was in office, the potential to get a Republican governor. Christine Drazen is neck and neck with the Democrat Tina Kotek. I mean, there's a lot more conversation about Oregon turning potentially red, at least from a gubernatorial standpoint.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I'm actually a voting PCP in my county, and so I've been able to campaign for her and other Republican candidates, gubernatorial candidates in the state, and we're just really energized. And also on top of that, Kate Brown has just done the most disastrous yeah. job, and she's been pretty much a dictator, just like Inslee, obviously. And so people are just getting out there, and hopefully we can motivate enough voters to say, hey, we need to see a different change in the state.
Well, fingers crossed in that world. I obviously want the Republican to win, certainly over Tina Kotek, who's just so far to the mm-hmm. left. We've been talking with Kareem Patton, veteran, who says he was fired over a social media post. I appreciate you sharing your story. I think it's important to highlight these, and we'll let people think what they might.
Thank you, Jason, for having me on and bringing light to this story. And I love everything you do. Keep doing it. And you are a definite light in the Seattle area.
Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. That, again, was Kareem Patton. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The Quick Hit.
So this is a really interesting story that came out of Mediaite, and really they're going into a book called Unchecked, the Untold Story Behind Congress's Botched Impeachments of Donald Trump. It's written by Rachel Bade, who I used to have on my night show all the time, actually. She's pretty good. And they talk about a portion of this book in which Jerry Nadler, the Democrat congressman from New York, who, by the way, just won a re-election bid against a fellow Democrat. It was actually pretty nasty. He apparently was saying that the whole thing, the impeachment proceeding, was absolutely unconstitutional. Now, according to this book, Per Mediaite, he clashed not only with Nancy Pelosi, but also Adam Schiff, as the House planned to vote on the resolution outlining the impeachment proceedings. Now, Schiff, who was in charge of this whole thing, got into it with Nadler, who was pushing back. And at one point, according to the book, he said, "I don't appreciate your tone." But Nadler then responded, according to this book, said it's unfair and it's unprecedented and it's unconstitutional. And in particular, he was concerned about the House Judiciary Committee not being able to cross-examine witnesses. So Adam Schiff then responded, again, according to this book, "I don't appreciate your tone. I worry you're putting us in a box for our investigation." And apparently Nadler's staff, quote unquote, sucked up to the Pelosi staff in what they're calling a relentless way to try to get the process to be a little bit more fair. Nadler had his staff look into past impeachment proceedings and found that presidents were given the opportunity to face witnesses and cross-examine them, according to Mediaite. Nadler reportedly said, quote, "If we're going to impeach, we need to show the country that we gave the president ample opportunity to defend himself." And part of his issue here is this would be seen not only to Trump and his supporters, but just anyone who's maybe looking at this in a fair way. This could be seen as being entirely politically motivated. Now, obviously, Nadler lost out in his arguments because it was entirely politically motivated, 100%. And anyone who's looking at it honestly, regardless of whether or not you hate or love Donald Trump, regardless of whether or not you think he should have been impeached, I think it is fair to say a reasonable person would look specifically at what was going on and how it was done and conclude that this was motivated by politics. And so part of me wants to say, you know, kudos, I guess, to Jerry Nadler for pushing back privately, because I imagine there was a lot of pressure for him to just go along. But at the end of the day, he still went along with it. He still went along with it. He was one of the impeachment managers. He went along with it. And not just once, but twice. And so for you to publicly do what you sort of said privately was unconstitutional, that's kind of shameful, isn't it? Isn't that just a little bit shameful? Isn't that a little bit despicable? It is just bizarre to me that you couldn't at least get Democrats to see what was so obvious. And what they ended up doing was they made a martyr out of Donald Trump. They made a martyr out of him. Because the people who are obviously fans of the president, former president, they're emotionally involved. They're passionate about it. They're passionate about him. We should be. Especially when we see something so blatantly political. So all they did was further inflame the passions of the folks on the right who will back him if he chooses to run again because they know that he was cheated twice. And then you have some of the people who are down the middle who just look at this and say, man, look, I don't like the guy, I don't like Trump, but there's something just is wrong about this. There's something that it just doesn't feel right. And the impact of that, I would argue, is that, hey, guess what? Number one, the January 6th commission doesn't seem to be moving the needle at all with the American people because they just saw how political the impeachments were. Now they definitely know that it's political, this January 6th commission. Now they're certain of how political it is. And number two, I imagine even though some of the people down the middle who were put off by the whole impeachment process and the stunt that they pulled over on the right or on the left, I have to imagine they might not say, okay, I'm going to vote for a President Trump should he run again, but they might say, I'm going to give the Republican Party a little bit more attention. I'm going to pay just a little bit more attention to the other side. And when you have all of these issues on our side, when you have all this stuff lining up for us, crime, homelessness, drug use, inflation, you get one person giving you just 10% more time than you otherwise would get, they're more likely to vote for us or our side than they are the other side. And so I truly believe, even though I know that they think what they did was right and they're pretending they did it to save the country, none of them did it to save the country. That's all nonsense. But what I'm certain of is that this is blowing up in their face. It blew up in their face at the time, but the media pretended otherwise. And I think it's going to blow up in their face come November. Certainly, I'm hopeful of it.
The Last Rants.
And with that, as much as I'm hopeful that it'll blow up in their face, I continue to wonder how many people are truly getting activated in their community. I'm truly wondering that. Because what I'm seeing here is, you know, the ebb and flow of some of the polls. Some people looking and is, oh, Tiffany Smiley's doing well. But then I still see a lot of people who are stepping back and saying on Twitter, on Facebook, you know, what's the point?
They're just going to cheat anyway.
What's the point? Washington State is so deeply blue, it's never going to change. What's the point? We're never truly going to be able to win anything here. And every time I see that, I wonder whether or not people will end up voting. The polls suggest that they will on the right, but they also suggest they will on the left here locally. And every single time I see one of those stories, one of those tweets, one of those messages from someone who's telling me, I don't think it's going to happen. Man, that kills me. Boy, does that kill me. Because I look at this and I say to myself, oh, we are so close. I'm feeling the energy. We're so close. Only to see that that one tweet, not only does it mean that that person might not vote, but might inspire someone else not to vote. So please, 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 make sure you're stepping up. You're showing your enthusiasm, getting other people enthusiastic about this race, whether it's Tiffany Smiley, Matt Larkin, Joe Kent, whomever. On the local level, Simon Sefcik, Jesse Young, Greg Gilday. You've got so many really good people who are running. We could win this, but it's going to take an army of our people to make sure we go out and vote. So be part of that army. And that's the last rants.